95.7 Ben FM presents Her Story with Kathy Romano.
Welcome to Her Story. I'm your host, Kathy Romano. If you're listening for the first time or you're not quite familiar with the show, it's an entertainment style show where we focus on women with interesting stories, inspiring women throughout the area. So over the holiday, Santa brought two kittens to my six-year-old who has been begging for kittens for the past 2 years. Yes, we got two of them. We didn't go with one. We went with two. They are absolutely adorable. Two white kittens. We got the runt of the litter, and then we got the wild and crazy one who climbs up my curtains, which is just lovely. But they're absolutely adorable, and we've been having so much fun with them. They're like little babies just running around the entire house. So when I got the request to have today's guest on, I thought, well, this is perfect. So my next guest has over a decade of veterinarian experience in small animal medicine and surgery. She has worked at several of the most prestigious practices on the main line. Born and raised right here in the Philadelphia area, Dr. Heather DiGiacomo just celebrated the one-year anniversary of the opening of her own practice, Newtown Square Veterinarian Hospital. And she's here today to tell us her story. Dr. Heather DiGiacomo, thanks for joining me.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
So this interview is very timely because Santa brought my six-year-old two kittens for Christmas.
I'm so excited to hear this.
Before we get into that, you're from the Philadelphia area. Where did you grow up?
So I grew up in Wayne. So I've really lived here more or less my whole life. I went away to college in New York for a couple of years, but pretty much been in the Philadelphia area ever since.
Where'd you go to high school?
I went to the Academy of Notre Dame, which is in Villanova. And then I went to Colgate University, which is in New York. And then I went to the University of Pennsylvania for vet school.
And that's a pretty well-known vet school, right?
It is. It's actually the first veterinary school in the country.
Oh, so then yes, it is.
And if you're a Penn graduate, you have a VMD after your name. All the other veterinarians in America have a DVM after their name.
Okay.
And it's because the veterinary school at Penn actually came out of the medical school. So that's where the MD comes from. So if you see a VMD after somebody's name, that means they went to Penn.
Oh, so does it just specify that they went to Penn, or is it better to have that, or does it not really matter?
Well, maybe I'm a little biased.
Okay, yeah.
Maybe we're a little better. No, but it's basically the same degree. It's just unique to the Penn graduates.
So I recently went to a vet. He graduated from Cornell, and I've recently been reading some studies about felines, and it seems as though a lot of them come out of Cornell. So I'm guessing they also have a well-known program?
Absolutely. They're definitely considered one of the best vet schools. There's only about, I think, 30 vet schools in the country. So there's
really not
a lot of them. Yeah. So they're all pretty well regarded.
Now, you worked at a number of practices on the main line. Tell me a little bit about your work experience and then what led you to where you currently work.
Yeah. So I mean, I've really practiced in the same area my whole career, more or less. I grew up on the main line and I'm fortunate enough to be practicing there. And I worked at a couple of different practices, really small ones and a couple larger ones. But I knew from vet school that I really wanted to own my own practice. So it was something I was always working towards. And I just learned along the way, learned what to do and in some cases what not to do. And I was able to take all that and make it my own.
So you have your own practice. It's been opened a year now. How is it going?
It's actually going great. I mean, you know, I definitely have my days where I think, what did I get myself into? But I would say 90% of the time, it's awesome. It really is the best decision I ever made.
And what led you there? Were you the little kid who always loved pets and you knew this was the direction you were going to go in? Or did you get there in a non-traditional way?
I definitely got here in a non-traditional way. I mean, I definitely was the kid that was always, you know, hanging with the goats at the petting zoo. And we always had pets growing up. I grew up in a medical family. My father's a physician. My brother's a physician. So I was really tuned into that. I thought I wanted to be a human physician for a while. And I spent some time volunteering at my dad's hospital. And I knew it really wasn't for me. So I actually had a different career before I went to vet school. I majored in English and theater in college. I wanted to be in journalism. And I worked at CNN in Manhattan for a couple years. And
what did you do for them?
I did marketing. But really, I was sitting in an office staring at a computer. And I was an assistant. You know, I was 23. 3 years old. So I really didn't have any authority to do anything. It sounds interesting, but it wasn't. And I was volunteering at the ASPCA in Manhattan. And I liked that entirely more than I liked my job. And I realized that that was more intriguing to me than what I was doing. So I decided I needed to go back to school.
So you went back to school and you became a vet. Now, you don't look old enough to not only be a veterinarian, but to own your own practice.
Oh, my gosh, you're amazing. You
and
made my day.
And to say you started somewhere else and then went to this career.
It was a short-lived career. I would say it was only about 3 years out of school. I realized pretty quickly it wasn't the right thing for me.
So you treat small animals, and we were talking about that. That basically means dogs and cats. But then you added that you treat chickens.
We do. So I know that sounds really crazy, but backyard chickens are a thing right now. And you see that people have them in Center City. there's a lot of areas where people are having chickens, and in some cases they're legal, some cases they're illegal, but that's another topic. They need medical care. And so I certainly didn't really know much about it, but I decided to start learning because those chickens need care. And a lot of our dog and cat owners have backyard chickens. And so I figured, why not? You know, better us than somebody else to try and help them.
That is so funny. And you're right. I know a number of people that in like the last 2 or 3 years have gotten chickens.
It's been an explosion. I mean, it's a trend, and I don't think it's a trend that's leaving. And I was actually talking to New Bolton Center is Penn's large animal campus in Kennett Square. And there's actually a state chicken vet that works there. And I was consulting with her on a case that we had of a chicken that was sick. And she was wonderful. But she said, can I help you learn more so that you can provide better care? Because we're desperately in need of vets to care for all these backyard chickens. So it's something we're learning about every day. But
wow.
You know, we'd rather try than not.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So before the interview, you had a surgery. What was your surgery?
Just a spay. Yeah. So, I mean, pretty bread and butter stuff for a vet.
All right. Well, since you brought that up, I'm going to bring up my kittens. I was going to go there right away. But of course, I have to. So I got the runt of the litter. Then I also got a maniac that climbs all over the curtains and is crazy. But they're so cute and so much fun. But we're talking now. Obviously, we have to get them spayed and neutered. And we did take them to a vet. It's been a long time since I've been to a vet. My cat was, I think he was 15 when he died. And so you figure, and he's been dead for 4 years. So it was that long ago that I had a kitten. I forget all these kitten things, you know. And obviously, I'm sure there's been advancements in veterinarian care. So he was telling me about the anesthesia that's used to put the cats to sleep and then when they wake up. And I remember with my cat years ago, anytime he was put under, he always had a problem when he woke up. So he was telling me that the type of anesthesia that's used is important. Is that correct?
I would definitely say so. I mean, it's always changing. And I always say to people, humans are our best test subjects. So if something works a long enough time in human medicine, eventually someone will start trying it for dogs and cats. And so we usually end up adapting a lot of our protocols based on what works for people. So, for instance, one of the most common anesthetic drugs we use is something called propofol. Most people know it as, you know, the Michael Jackson drug, giving my milk,
course.
Right? But it's something that is used all the time for short procedures in human medicine. And so, you know, again, it's been used for so long with people that, you know, everybody knows how safe it is and how well it works. So eventually it gets adapted and we start using it for our patients. And so that's, I think, just it's always evolving and there's always newer and better things that are coming available to us. Once people use them long enough, eventually some brave vet is going to try it on a cat or a dog.
So we got two. Is it true that that's better and now I don't have to feel bad when I leave them home alone because they've got each other?
100%. I always recommend that, especially if there's no existing pets in the house. If you're kind of starting from scratch, I always tell people to get two kittens because they're holy terrors. I mean, and you do forget what it's like. I have a kitten right now, too. He's a little older. He's about 6 months. But you forget how much energy they have and how bad they can be. So they have a built-in playmate, somebody else to beat up other than, you know, just chewing on you all the time.
Yeah, I tried to let them roam the house and they could come into my room if they wanted to. They were waking me up at all hours. I mean, all hours jumping. For whatever reason, they think my leg is like something that they need to attack in the middle of the night if I move one little inch in the bed.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. It's so cute, though. Okay, so I'm going to bring up this issue, and I thought it to be controversial. I don't know if the vets do or not, but declawing.
It is controversial. I would say that the philosophy on declawing is definitely changing. In the time I've been in the industry, I've been a vet for 12 years, and I do feel like when I first started practicing 12 years ago, declawing was done a little bit more commonly. I feel like it's not done as commonly as it used to be, and I think it's a good thing. I mean, I think the average person doesn't really know what a declaw is. We're not just removing the nail. We're actually removing the bone that's attached to the nail. So it's a partial amputation of the toe, and that's times 10 toes. So it's known to be a very painful procedure. And it's thought now that we've had a lot of years of studying cats that have been declawed that it can contribute to other unnecessary and unwanted behaviors like not using the litter pan, aggression. And the thought is that maybe that's just kind of as a result of chronic pain that's associated with the declaw sites. Declawing is banned in virtually every other country other than the United States. It's banned in Europe. It's banned in Australia. There are some individual states and towns in the U.S. that are starting to ban it as well. It's still legal in Pennsylvania. We've elected to not perform declaws at my practice. There are still practices that do, but I'm really interested in cat welfare. Cats are my favorite. And I felt like I needed to be able to sleep well at night, and I wouldn't be able to if I knew that I was doing this surgery.
So as opposed to using a scalpel, I know that some of the vets use lasers. Do you know anything about the laser removal of the claws?
I do, and I worked at a practice that had a surgical laser, and when I did declaws, that's how I did them. And I do feel like the cats did better with laser than with the traditional method, which is with the scalpel blade. But it doesn't change the act of the surgery. So it's still an amputation, and it's still an amputation of a bone on 10 toes of the cat. So I think there's maybe a little bit less bleeding, a little bit less inflammation with the laser. It doesn't change the act of the surgery itself. So I guess if your cat has to have a declaw for some reason, the laser is the way to go. But I think in an ideal world, we're not declawing cats at all.
And then what about the neuter surgery? So will that actually calm him down and then he won't climb up my curtains?
Could only hope it worked that well. I think, how old are your kittens again?
They're about 4 months, I think.
4 months. Okay. So it's unlikely at that young age that a lot of their crazy behavior is related to sexual hormones. So I think it is probably a myth that neutering calms them down. I think maybe a little bit. Maybe for male dogs, it does a little bit. I think it's more just normal kitten behavior, so I'm not sure neutering would do too much for it. But he'll outgrow it, I promise.
He'll outgrow the curtain climbing?
They definitely will.
He's actually doing it a lot less now. And I really don't want the kitten behavior to go away. Like, it is so cute right now. And my six-year-old loves it. I'm constantly playing and running around, and they tire each other out. I feel like he tires them out so much with the little feather on the stick. They pass out, the two little things. It's so cute. And I love that they sleep together and they came from the same litter. So I feel like they really have that sibling bond, I guess.
Absolutely. And it's so great. I mean, I'm obviously biased, but I think it's awesome for kids to grow up with pets. And if, you know, I know households have allergies and different things that can limit that. But I think if that's an experience you can provide, it's a great experience. I mean, because they learn compassion, they learn about that, you know, unequivocal love that you get back from your pets. And hopefully, eventually, as he gets a little older, he'll be learning responsibility too.
Oh, no, he's learning responsibility right now.
Nice. Can he come work with my son, please, who's 3 years older and still doesn't help?
Well, he's doing it now. Figure they're new. They just got here on December 25th. So they're still fairly new. And he's still helping out, though. So hopefully it stays that way. Have you ever heard of City Kitty?
I don't think I have. Tell me more.
Okay, so it's a product that was developed by a local woman. She created it. She was actually on Shark Tank. It's a product to potty train cats. Have you seen it?
I have it. Does it go over the toilet?
It goes over the toilet.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm going to try it. I think I'm going to try it. At least try. So it goes over the toilet. It's a full litter box and you put the litter in it. And then it has, you know, stages where I guess after a week you take away one little circle and then obviously it becomes bigger and bigger where there's just litter on the outskirts. And then eventually you completely take it away and you have the cat from Meet the Parents and he's going to the bathroom in the toilet. I don't know if this works. The guys that I work with think I'm insane, but I think I might try it.
I think you need to try it. I've had a number of clients over the years that have tried to toilet train their cats. There's been a bunch of different products on the market to help make that happen. I would say most people have not had success with it, but the few that I've seen that were able to do it, I mean, it's amazing. It's no litter cleanup, no litter waste. And I think if you positively reinforce them, you know, give them some sort of really high value food treat after they've gone, you can probably train those kittens pretty easily, I would think.
And it might work. Well, I'm going to try it. I'm going to give it a try. Yep. I'm going to see how it goes. We'll stay with the cats for a second, but wet, dry, or both?
So the current thinking in feline medicine is that we really want to offer cats both wet and dry food, probably more wet than dry, if anything. What we know is cats are what are known as obligate carnivores, which means they have no dietary requirement for carbohydrates. So dogs are omnivores, humans are omnivores, but cats are true carnivores. And what we know is dry food has lots of carbohydrates in it. There's just no other way to make dry food without carbs. So it's thought that that's one of the reasons why we see so many obese cats in America is that they're all eating dry food and it tends to be carb heavy.
I had an obese cat. My cat that passed away 4 years ago was very large. He was almost 30 pounds. I used to tell people he's big boned anyway, but then he had a little extra weight on him. But he, from when the time he was a kitten, did not like wet food. So I had no choice. I gave him dry food, but then he developed urinary issues and I had to give him that food that I was prescribed. I had to have a prescription card to buy it for him.
Yeah. So it's also thought, you know, the dry food we worry about, again, in terms of the carbs and the obesity, but we also know cats tend to not be big water drinkers. I mean, they're considered desert creatures. They came out of Egypt. So they're designed to do really well with little moisture. And then it's thought that that may be a contributing factor to the urinary problems that we see in cats. Another advantage of the canned food is just inherently increasing their moisture intake so that even if they don't drink a lot of water, they're getting it through their food. I mean, canned food is like 80% water and 20% protein, essentially. So we do like, especially with kittens, like with, you know, with your two, we like to get them on wet food early because cats are so particular about what they eat. And it's very hard in some cases to start to introduce new things down the road. Oh. So we like to start it from day one, get that dry food and some canned food in front of them so they're used to the different tastes and flavors.
So how often should I be giving them the dry food? Once a day, twice a day?
I would say my preferred scenario is maybe doing a measured portion of dry food once a day and then a measured portion of canned food once a day. So one meal of dry, one meal of wet. So about 50-50 of each.
And don't leave the food out, right?
We prefer not to do that. As you probably learned with your other cat, you know, most cats will, and dogs too, will overeat if the food is out all the time. So even if it doesn't seem like they're inhaling all the food, probably what's happening is through the course of the day, they just keep going back to the bowl. I always say it's like, you know, if I have a bag of Doritos in my house, I do the same thing. I just keep picking at them, even if I'm not hungry, just because they're there. So I just don't put the Doritos in my house. So I think it's the same thing with cats. They don't have that mechanism that says stop eating when you're full. So if we portion control for them, then hopefully we can prevent them from being overweight in the first place.
We've talked a lot about cats because I have cats. That's what I have experience with. I'm not a dog person, but of course there are tons and tons of dog owners listening today. Just give me a couple of tips, some advice that you have for dog owners.
I would say the things, you know, kind of current things that, you know, that we think about most often, you know, with our weather being bizarrely unpredictable, we are seeing fleas and ticks 12 months out of the year in Pennsylvania. So it used to be we would get these consistently cold winter months, 3 or 4 months where it was very consistently cold, and we would see our tick populations and our flea populations go away. So people were in the habit of maybe not using their flea and tick preventative in the winter months. And we're at a point where, you know, we had 63 degrees last week. Even though that's followed by cold weather, it's not consistently cold. So our ticks are with us 12 months out of the year now in Pennsylvania. And, you know, we see Lyme disease in dogs as often as we see it in humans. So we're really having to recommend that people use those preventatives 12 months out of the year because it's always tick season in Pennsylvania. I think something else we're trying to really talk about clients with more is the concept of pet insurance. Veterinary care is not inexpensive. And I think especially a lot of people that maybe have never had a pet before or, you know, new to pet ownership often underestimate the costs associated with veterinary care. And we find that if you have the right insurance policy in place, and they're not all created equal, but there's some really good ones out there, it allows you to make the best decisions for your pet with taking economics out of the equation. So you can just say yes without saying, what can I afford and what can I afford? And the example I cite most often is the most common injury we see in dogs, orthopedic injury, is a torn cruciate. So the same thing that happened to Carson Wentz, that's what happens to dogs frequently. I saw two cases of that last week. And the average surgical cost to repair that injury in a dog is around $5,000.
Oh, my gosh.
Right. And I don't have $5,000 just sitting around that I could, you know, devote to something like that. I think most people don't. But if you had insurance in place before that injury, they would cover, you know, maybe 90% of it up to your deductible. So it's part of the dialogue that we're starting to have more and more with pet owners as veterinary costs do continue to rise for people.
And is it just like our insurance? You just pay a monthly fee and then it's covered?
For the most part, yes. I mean, you do pay, you know, you pay monthly premiums and you can decide, you know, based on the level of coverage you have, how much you want your premiums to be every month. The difference is it's more like auto insurance, I guess, in that you are responsible for your bill 100% when you go to the vet. And then you submit your invoice to the pet insurance company and they reimburse you directly.
And do they determine then what they reimburse, or it's based on the plan that you
It's based on the plan. Yeah. Okay. So like some of the plans we recommend, they'll do 90% reimbursements for up to whatever limits you have set on your policy. So it could be $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, whatever you have set in place. The key is you have to do it before the pet is diagnosed with the medical condition because they're legally precluded from covering, you know, pre-existing conditions.
Okay.
So you want to do it when they're young and healthy.
Okay. Got it. I would imagine you see a number of emergencies that come into your practice.
We do. We don't see as many as we used to in general practice because we're very fortunate in this area. Particularly, we have lots of 24-hour emergency hospitals that are nearby. So, you know, we definitely have a couple. I saw one just this morning before I came in. It was a dog that came in with labored breathing. But I think it's pretty rare that we have somebody just rush right in with some sort of really dire acute emergency. It does happen, but less often than you would think. I think a lot of people in those circumstances tend to gravitate towards the 24-hour emergency hospitals.
Okay. What about the dogs being hit by cars or any animal being hit by a car?
We do see it, but pretty uncommonly. I think if you're in a 24-hour emergency clinic, you probably see, you know, maybe a couple of those a week. But in general practice, it's pretty uncommon for us to see those types of things. I think, again, people in this area just tend to know where the emergency clinics are, and they'll gravitate more towards those for those really acute emergencies.
And I feel like for the most part, dog owners are keeping their dogs on leashes, whereas you never used to. I mean, I remember as a kid, we had a dog for a short period of time. We just let him out. Like, he ran Absolutely. The neighborhood, said hi to neighbors, and then came home.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the law is that you have to have your dog on a leash. I mean, there's really nowhere that they're allowed to just be free range. So I do think we see a little bit less of that than we used to.
I know you have cats. Do you have dogs too?
I have two cats and a dog and fish.
And fish.
And chickens coming this spring.
Oh, really?
Yes.
All right. Well, let's not forget about our chicken owners. Do you have any tips for them?
I guess what I would say is the key is that there's a pretty good ratio between the amount of chickens you can have versus the amount of space that you have. For instance, if you're keeping them inside in their coop, you know, it's about 4 square feet per chicken. If you're keeping them outside in a penned area, it's about 10 square feet per chicken. A lot of the people that are having chickens these days, like myself, are, you know, we're suburban chicken farmers, so to speak. We don't have multi-acre properties. So I think overcrowding is an issue. You know, people tend to put maybe too many chickens in one small spot, and they can get some secondary health issues if there's too many in the space that's reserved for them. So there's ample information available about that, but you don't want to put 35 chickens when you only have, you know, half an acre of property.
Sure. What do you do for fun?
Oh, I exercise. That keeps my sanity. I read. I podcast. I will confess to listening to a few Preston and Steve podcasts here and there.
Oh, good.
Yeah. I've been a longtime listener. And there's not much time for much other than that when you're, you know, a sole vet in a new business. So I don't have a lot of time for hobbies, but hoping that will change as I get to hire some people to work for me.
Sure. Now, did I read that you have an interest in ponies?
Well, you know, I keep asking for one for my birthday. My husband has yet to come through on that. So I'm just going to keep my fingers crossed.
Tell me something about you that our listeners would find interesting.
Well, I would say maybe one of my claims to fame for older people that are listening is back when I thought that I was going to have a career in television and in journalism, I was able to do an internship on the set of ER, and I got to meet George Clooney and Noah Wiley, and I was totally tongue-tied. And I'm actually in an episode of ER where if you blink twice, you might miss me, but I'm there. And it was one of the coolest experiences.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, that was in my other life.
How was Clooney?
As dreamy as you'd think.
Yeah.
And he was sweaty because he'd just been playing basketball outside with Noah Wiley. So it was, it made me a little tongue-tied. But
oh, that's too funny. Well, thank you so much for coming by. I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. I'm so glad that you have some kitties, and hopefully they won't end up on America's Funniest Home Videos.
I know, like my last one, right? If you'd like to find out more about Dr. Heather or make an appointment at the Newtown Square Veterinarian Hospital, go to newtownsquarevet.com or follow them on Facebook. Thanks again for coming by.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's today's show. Thanks so much for joining me again this week. If you know somebody like Dr. Heather or somebody who has some sort of inspirational story, a woman who has done something amazing, maybe she has a successful job like Dr. Heather, or she has some story to tell, I would love to hear about her. You can submit someone to be on Her Story or submit yourself by sending me an email. It's herstory@957benfm.com. Thanks so much for joining me. We'll see you next Sunday, 7:30 a.m. for another Her Story episode. I'm Kathy Romano. Have a nice rest of your weekend.
This has been Her Story with Kathy Romano. Her Story is produced by WBEN-FM in Philadelphia and airs weekly or on demand on your mobile device. Listen or subscribe at 957benfm.com.